Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of mortals and immortals on this very beautiful May day in Plainfield. We are recording today, yes, from Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we welcome you all. We'll begin with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 283, an excerpt from there, and page 8 of Divinity Course in General Collectania. God made man immortal, and in his image, the image of his own eternity. And to this end, he gave him dominion over all the earth, over all the works of his hands. This is the truth of being, and nothing can change the truth into a lie. Nothing can wrest man out of the Father's hand, for it is he whom hath made us, and not we ourselves, and hath given us life everlasting. Therefore health, harmony, and immortality are the everlasting facts of being. It is so. When we detect error as unreal and God as all, we will be immortal. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. All right, Karen, our watching point.
Watch number 80. Watch, lest you continue to accept the world's belief in good and bad matter or mortal mind, instead of perceiving that whenever or wherever matter or mortal mind appear to be more harmonious or desirable to the advancing student, it is either mesmerism putting forth its claims to hinder one's growth, or belief melting into such thinness that more of truth is shining through. Bottled soda is all made of the same ingredients. Yet we like some flavors and dislike others. Mortals are fundamentally the same and differ only in flavor. How inconsistent for a student of Christian Science to continue to admit that he likes mortal mind or matter when flavored in certain ways, when he has pledged with himself and before God to deny the existence of all mortal mind or matter, and work for the elimination of the belief in its existence, in order that truth and its desirability may appear.
Thank you. Okay, comments on that?
Well, I think the belief in good and bad, or good and evil, when we personalize it, then we're acting like a mortal. That's what mortals do. They personalize good and evil. And if we're not doing that, if we're knowing that, going back to the first chapter of Genesis, that all good, there's only good, and it's impersonal because it's God, then we're acting and being an immortal, who we really are anyway. that's what I have to say.
And when when you worship the good personality versus the bad personality, or the good flavor versus the bad flavor, you're worshiping something other than God, aren't you?
Yes.
This trips up a lot of Christian Scientists, because a lot of Christian Scientists aspire to becoming healthy, wealthy. And humanly wise.
A better flavor.
Right?
Yeah, better flavor. Thank you.
When some Christian Scientists become wealthy enough, unfortunately, many of them sort of plateau and stop growing, because they feel like they've accomplished their objective,
and they that's their human destiny, but not their divine. Zary, were you going to speak? Thank you.
Yes, I was going to say that, and what you just said about their human destiny, I think it's very often to call that success. But what I was going to say is, judge not that we be not judged. That's been something that I've been working with lately.
Thank you. That's the grand importance of the Sermon on the Mount.
Yes.
And, I've heard people, Christian Scientists, people, they've been to a wedding or graduation or something. They come back, oh, so beautiful. Look, they married someone so wonderful and everything was so lovely. And why isn't my life? And why didn't my kids turn out that way? Aha. That is just what we're talking about here. So someone demonstrated some beautiful matter. I mean, you don't know. Yeah. You know nothing. You're judging, as Zary just said, outward appearances. You're allowing yourself to become envious and jealous. You've jumped over the line. You're out of the Father's house. And I hear it perhaps too often. That's why if you decide you're going to these human things, especially this time of year, you put your armor on. And as we talked about last week, unless a person is expressing Christ, then whatever it is that looks so beautiful is just a trap. And what does Mrs. Eddy even say in Science and Health about that? Something about that beautiful matter. It's, nothing.
Always erroneous.
Erroneous. Mm-hmm. Always erroneous. Thank you. Sometimes beautiful. Thank you, Florence. Sometimes beautiful, always erroneous. Don't get tricked. Go ahead, Zary.
And what she also says that came to me last night about we take on certain things, I'm paraphrasing, like a Parisian,
fashion. Garment, right.
Mm-hmm. Garment. Too often we think, well, if the world likes it, it must be good. And we have to watch our thought. I used to talk to a person who also taught, and I thought, oh, she's so lucky. Her boyfriend gives her 5,000 euros every month. And, why am I in that discussion? I should be grateful that God gives me everything I need and not that I'm thinking about the human story of other people.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The human story about other people. Please don't fall into that trap. To me, that's what this watching point is addressing. And people fall into it, and Christian Scientists who should know, be beyond that fall into it.
Yeah, imagine the temptation that have to. She would have to constantly handle thinking that her abundance comes from a person and not God.
Yeah.
That's true.
The word enamored comes to mind for some reason. You get so enamored with the human aspects of things, and because it looks good, it feels good, it's good, good. Uh-huh. But what she says is right. And sometimes beautiful, always erroneous. So it's spirituality, spirit that we need.
Nicodemus had to also deal with that because he had no spine. He was meeting Jesus at night, someone you meet on the side, instead of standing up for his relationship with God.
And he it took him a while, but he eventually came around.
Yeah, it did, but that's a very important part of the situation between his relation when he started out. He gave Jesus things, but he didn't know how to just say, okay, this is what I have to do. This is where I have to go.
Yeah.
Miss Seti says, emerge gently from matter to spirit. That's all he was doing.
Yeah. He came from a very, very different place. So I give him credit for going, stepping forward. Yes.
Not to go on too long with this topic, but you also don't know what's going on in the house. This is, it even says some of these mansions have the worst things going on behind.
Yes.
And maybe these people are suffering and you're busy watching their beautiful life, but they actually need your
your prayers.
Too much in modern society is trying to curate this perfect image, so don't be fooled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes back to your attitude, your motive. If you see it as a gift from God, then you're safe. But if you see it as something that you accomplished or someone else gave to you, then you have enslaved yourself to someone or something other than God.
You see it as a gift from
your own growth spiritual. It hinders your growth spiritual, I think.
And this is the main thing, really, about this in this story, because you are leaving your immortality for your mortal destiny when you do this. So thank you, Florence. Yes. And you see it as a gift from God, and also to share that gift with others, not to just get fat and happy with it. Who's speaking?
Sometimes when we look at other people, we see what they want us to see, but not what's really going on. And I was kind of, there's a little bit of a humorous thing going on with that about the green grass is greener on the other side of the fence. And there's a thing with Irma Bombeck years ago wrote something along the lines of, the grass is always greener over the septic tank. So I always think about that, you know, when you think the grass is greener over there, it's just over the top of the septic tank.
Right, thank you. All right, well, okay, so we have this wonderful gift, all of us, of immortality, never born into matter, never dying out of it. And are we thinking of it and experiencing it and making it ours? And with that, as this lesson brings out, that there's no aging process. The lesson handles everything that could possibly be sight, hearing, movement, all of this. We should not be accepting these beliefs. They are beliefs, and they would try to take you down the chute to chutes. But there are many ways, you know, that it comes, and how we... This watching point explains when we're seeing good matter and buying into it, you're accepting your mortality. So, all right, Nancy, let's begin with your contribution today.
These are some excerpts from the article, Immortality, the 1947 Association Address by Herbert Rieke. Now, every religion and philosophy on earth, except for Christian Science, teaches that you and I, everyone, live in a state of mortality. They teach that everyone is born into matter or mortality on a certain day of a certain month of a certain year. The world has accepted this lie as though it were true and has paid the taxes of suffering as a consequence. Then Christian Science came along and exclaimed, "No, folks, this is all a lie. You are not mortals living in a state of mortality. You are all immortal living in a state of immortality and subject only to the laws and rules of immortality, which produce health, holiness, and life eternal. Is it any wonder that we are all profoundly grateful for this comforter that has awakened us to the fact that we do not have to pay the taxes of suffering?" On page 492 of the textbook, our leader says, "For right reasoning, there should be but one fact before the thought, namely, spiritual existence. In reality, there is no other existence, since life cannot be united to its unlikeness, mortality. Don't be a mortal living in a state of mortality. Be an immortal living in this glorious state of immortality, enjoying everything immortal, beautiful, good, and true. Live in the eternal mind that knows no beginning and no end, no birth and no death. Live in that perfect life that exists through all time. It is eternity itself. In no other way can you demonstrate the infinite capacities of healing in Christian Science." And from Mrs. Eddy, Science and Health. "Life is eternal. We should find this out and begin the demonstration thereof. Life and goodness are immortal. Let us then shape our views of existence into loveliness, freshness and continuity rather than into age and blight.
Isn't that beautiful? Thank you. And, you know, both Rikis did articles on immortality. Both of them are wonderful, and you should be familiar with them if you're not, because the Herbert Riki, I'm always taken with him and with her, but mainly him. He, in Psalm 92, it is a good thing to give thanks unto the Lord and to sing praises unto thy name, O Most High, to show forth thy loving kindness in the morning and thy faithfulness every night. My horn shalt thou exalt like the horn of a unicorn. I shall be anointed with fresh oil. The righteous shall flourish like the palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those that be planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bring forth fruit in old age. They shall be fat and flourishing. Such a beautiful description. Do you see yourself like a palm tree, flourishing like a palm tree, growing like the cedars in Lebanon? I guess they were just magnificent trees. They had very deep roots. They lived very long time. And then I again, the idea of oil is so important. My horn shall exalt thee like the horn of a unicorn. I shall be anointed with fresh oil. And in Riki's, this may not be the article on immortality, but he speaks about oil and how important it is, and how Jesus taught the religion of joy, be of good cheer, and know your joy, no man taketh from you. A burdened, joyless Christian Science practitioner, or anyone, cannot heal. When you are bubbling over with joy, you will heal with very little effort. If you should discover one day that your automobile did not have much power, it was getting hot and beginning to smoke, and if you also heard a noise in the engine, you would take it to a garage or filling station. What is the first thing the mechanic would do? Undoubtedly, he would lift the hood, pull out a little measuring rod to see how much oil you have. 10 chances to 1, he would show you need lubricating oil. Now, I know we've talked about this before, but to me, it is very important. It might also be said, if you use a good quality of the oil of gladness in your thinking, if you will freshen it up regularly, and if you will maintain a good quantity, way up to the full mark, you can live at least 100 years without an ache or a pain, and with no slowing down of normal activity. Look at yourself in the mirror. Do you find a radiant, happy smile? He said, that's the indication of how much oil you have. If you're rah, 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 you've lost your oil. And how ridiculous. If you had a car that didn't have oil, you couldn't push it. You have to fill it with the oil. And what does Mrs. Eddy say that oil is in her definition in the glossary? Consecration, charity, gentleness, prayer, and heavenly inspiration. Every day, anoint yourself. God is anointing you with this oil. And again, I've mentioned this too from the Lessons of the Seventh Day, where Mrs. Eddy said, let love come into his bones like oil. When you lose your love and you're Mrs. or Mr. Grumpy Pants, you're going to have Mr. and Mrs. Grumpy Bones. So let love come into your bones like oil. Anoint yourself. There's no reason for your bones to be getting old and cranky unless you're getting old and cranky. She goes on. In Psalm 6, it says, O Lord, heal me, for my bones are vexed. And from Ezekiel, O ye dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. And then Mrs. Eddy says, and your bones shall rejoice, for God governs them. So, but are you rejoicing? And then Herbert Riki goes on to say, if you're if your car doesn't have oil, so what are you going to do? Push it ahead? You can't. So, because some people say, well, when I have my healing, then I'm going to be happy and I'm going to rejoice. We talk about this a lot, but no, the rejoicing, the gratitude has to come first. You put the oil into yourself, into your body with that, with gratitude, with joy, with praising God. And then your body will just go zippity zip. Otherwise, you're doing it backwards and it doesn't work. So this idea of oil and immortality is so important. And in some of the articles that Carrie sent, they talk about the responsive reading and all these people that lived many, 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 many years. And one of the articles said that perhaps in those days, there was a different climate. It was just a happier, more spiritual type life. And that attributed to this longevity. Another article brings out, and this is very important too, Jesus only lived a short time, didn't he? And he was only doing on this earth, yes. Thank you. His ministry work was only 3 years. And yet what he did was far more important than Methuselah, right? Who lived and lived and lived. Nothing is ever mentioned about what he did in his life. While those few years that Jesus was on this earth, those have lived forever. So it is your quality, not your quantity. But if you've got God's work to do, and I believe we all do, and it's very important, we should expect longevity. We have things we need to do, unless God tells us otherwise.
What? I've done research on that, and they found that the people that lived long lives were the grateful ones, the positive, the upbeat, God-loving, God-fearing. The list goes on, but they're all positive. But definitely grateful was the top.
Thank you.
Well, if you live 100 years, but you're miserable, it must feel like 1,000.
Right. Exactly. Thank you. And Ricky says, a smile in your heart will lubricate your entire being. Mm-hmm. So remember that. And remember, I try to think of it in the morning. I'm usually, before I get out of bed, I do think about the 23rd Psalm and having your head anointed with oil. In ancient times, oil was used a lot for perfume, the perfume of oil, you know, for your skin. It's a good thing to use, actually. Speaking to the ladies and to the men, put a little oil on your face. It's good. Yes. Yeah. And guess what? It doesn't have chemicals in it. It doesn't harm animals. It's a wonderful natural lubricant for everything. But so think about that. And then Dorothy Rieke, Immortality Brought to Light. And that wonderful story it starts out with, and it was a story Mrs. Evans used to give us, and I didn't know where it came from. Dorothy Rieke said it was a lecture, and I don't know what lecture, but anyway, about the baby that was born into a palace. He was a prince, the son of a king, and then he gets stolen by, according to the story, a gypsy. And he's taken into poverty and all of that kind of thing that goes with that. And then one day the king had people out searching for this child of his. And one day he gets found, but he doesn't know that he's, and how could I be a son of a king? And then he says, well, there must be two of me then, you know, the son of the king and then this gypsy version. And he had to learn, no, there's just the one, the son or the daughter of a king. And with all that implies, including immortality. And then it brings out how that is your story. Because we're bought in thinking we're mortals and all this kind of thing going on with problems, lack, sickness, sin, and death. And that is not your story, as Sari sometimes says. That's not your story. Your story is you are the son or daughter of the king and all that that implies. So start your day with that, as well as oil. Start your day with, I'm the son or daughter of the king. All good is mine by inheritance. All that I have is thine, the father says.
And one of the things that's really important in that story is how he realizes that he is the king's son, and he approaches the king with that, because the king, of course, has some questions. So he goes through his transformation of realizing who he really is.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. And then he realizes, well, I do look like the king. I am like the king. Yes. You realize you are the image and likeness of God. And then all good begins to unfold. I was thinking how I remember as a child when my mother came into Christian Science, you know, she was healed of cancer by reading the textbook. But everything in our household changed. And I felt that difference. It's only now that I'm thinking back on it. It was because of Christian Science. All I remember crying about going to doctors and being upset over this or that, and all that ended. All of it. A peace came over. And I know it was the peace that Science and Health and Christian Science gave my mother. And everything adjusted. All the problems that they thought I had as a child, they ended. It was quite remarkable. And I also remember coming to the Sunday school, this very Sunday school I'm sitting in now for the first time. I was like, wow, wow, this is amazing what I feel here. In the Long Year, some of you are members of Long Year. You know, that's the supposedly independent institution, I guess you'd call it, that preserves Mrs. Eddy's homes and everything they can about Mrs. Eddy. They have a museum, and it has done wonderful work. And they also have a magazine that they send out, what, every few months?
Twice a year.
Oh, twice a year. Long
spring year. And fall.
Well, any of them, the one most recent was a beautiful story about a Mary Easton, who was an early worker, one that I wasn't too familiar with. And she came into Science too, a healing she had of a bad back issue for 7 years. But it said that her father was just, he was old grumpy pants, yes. He had been in the Civil War. He'd been hurt, evidently. They said he was doubled over like a jackknife. He was very, I think they use the word vicious. He was not a nice man, evidently, in human belief, as they say. So anyway, when Mary Easton came into Science, she wanted to treat her father. And she said she never saw him that way. She wasn't going to see him that way at all. And at first he grumbled about it and didn't want it, but then he eventually said, okay. And she worked in him for 2 years, and then he was totally healed of all of this stuff, all of it. Everything was healed. And at one point, he started attending the Mother Church. I'm sure it was the original because they lived in Boston or Boston area. And he loved it. That's what he said. He'd sit there. He'd feel so peaceful, and he felt such a difference. And that partly is what healed him. And his daughter's prayers. She also healed her mother of a skin disease that had left her in a coma for a while. Totally healed her. Mrs. Eddy took note of her. And although she didn't feel she was ready to work in her home for any length of time, she used to shop in Boston for Mrs. Eddy and buy her all kinds of things. And she loved to do that. Anyway, it's a beautiful story. And if you're not a member of Long Year, it's worthwhile just to get those magazines. And I guess it's all online as well, right?
It is online. And they have a lot of gems that they put out.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of free information.
Yes.
Magazines, old issues.
Yes. So no matter
what. And if you ever visit Boston, it's worth spending half a day going through their museum. They really do have, did a good job.
Yeah, it's a nice one. It's a good one.
Mm-hmm. It is a good one. It is very good, and I'm so grateful.
It's in Brookline.
Yes. Yeah. I'm so grateful for it and for them. And Mrs. Longyear knew Mrs. Eddy, and she started this when Mrs. Eddy was still around, and she went to all the homes that were deteriorating
and bought
each one, because she was a very, very, very wealthy woman. But she used her money for good. So, all right, Chardell.
Let's see. In Science and Health, 15 on page 249, I was struck by, let us feel the divine energy of spirit. And on our website, I found the divine energies by Luther K. Bell. I'll just read a little. It's quite long. The demand, it starts out like this. The demand on every citizen of a democracy and on his government is to be strong. Now I'm going to go to page 2. True energy is God's will. It is the spiritual force of the divine mind, ever present, wholly good, reliable, and all-sufficient. The antithesis of divine energy or will is the mortal will, which is a mixture of belief in good and evil, spirit and matter, which is completely unsatisfactory and evil because it denies the allness of God good. In order to make use of the divine energies, we must earnestly strive to give up human will and outlining, and empty our thought of any false stimulus, which, with its abnormal activity and depressed reactions. This purification begun, we are ready to avail ourselves of the divine energies. The desire for good is present in every human being. As we cherish right desire and express it in daily living, we find that our capacity for good is being enlarged. This capacity includes receptivity to spiritual ideas from God, the divine energies so sorely needed by humanity. And I'm going to go, let's see, I'll finish with gratitude. That's on page 4. Gratitude is a great source of divine energy, for it acknowledges the activity of good and denies the reality of evil. This divine quality expressed in man's consciousness reinvigorates his being.
It's a beautiful article. Thank you. Yes. And I thought it's very interesting, because how often do you feel, you know, you have no energy? In order to make use of the divine energies, we must earnestly strive to give up human will and outlining, and empty our thought of any false stimulus, with its abnormal activity and depressed reactions. So when you're forging along on your own human will, you will feel depressed and have no energy. Also, depression is definitely a way to have no energy. If you're depressed, what is it? Is it Nehemiah, or the joy of the Lord is my strength? Again, joy and gratitude. I know it. I know when I've been depressed, I feel like I have no energy. So fill yourself up with God, the oil, and keep a smile on your face and a joy in your heart. And what was that, John Adams, Jeremy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, at the end of the John Adams miniseries, it had him talking about, he was quite old at the time, and he was talking about how he wished that he had always, you know, remembered the Bible where it said, rejoice evermore. And because that was not him when he was younger. But he had gotten to that point, and it was really quite beautiful.
Yeah, that was in David McCullough's biography about him, but also they did a, what was it?
Some sort of mini series.
Yeah, mini series. Yeah, in the very end. And he's dancing along the garden path, you know, rejoice evermore. It's so sweet, so happy. And some of the things, you know, you learn later on with wisdom, and but why not incorporate early on if you can? And that is certainly one of them, the rejoicing evermore. And again, in Psalm 139, that God has known me and searched me and acquainted with all my ways, possessed my reins, has covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Remember that every day. Remember that. You're fearfully and wonderfully made. Think of it. You know, think of it. Even the doctors say how many times your blood goes around and this and that happens. I mean, it's incredible. And all of us are like this. I mean, it's just an amazing thing, even on this so-called human level. It's incredible. So you're fearfully and wonderfully made. And God knew you in your womb. That means there can be no prenatal things going on, okay? Because sometimes people are born thinking they have a prenatal thing going on, something that happened. This wipes all that out. No, your immortality. You were not born into matter. You don't die out of it. And every morning, I've been telling people this from 390 to 393. Take possession of your body and govern its feelings and actions. All right? Take possession of your body and govern its feelings and actions. You can do that. And then it goes on to say, you can do it because God has made man capable of this, and nothing can deprive you of that power. Okay, Florence?
No, I was just thinking, even the gratitude for the wonderfully and fearfully made, gratitude for that, it will start off something that makes you more joyful.
Yes. Just that gratitude. Think about these things. Instead of thinking of all the negative stuff, think about all the wonderful things we have right here in Christian Science.
Yeah, I mean, I wake up every morning and I thank God for life, that I am alive. And I thank him for the privilege of being his image and likeness.
Yeah.
And what a privilege we have. Do we take advantage of it? Mm-hmm. Or do we ignore it?
Yes.
I think fearfully meant something much more beautifully back in the olden times. Like it says, awe is something like, it's a really, you awe of God is, and fearfully are similar. Oh. And that seeing fearfully, I think, is something that's almost unimaginable, but it's wonderful.
You're right. That's the definition of fearfully, is in awe.
Mm-hmm.
With great respect and honor. It's not afraid.
It's to even consider how
how wonderful
God is.
Yeah, exactly. How great God is. We should be in awe. That is one of the virtue medicines, you know, that we went over, awe, to be in awe. And talk about children, how they see things, everything new and fresh and beautiful. And we should approach every day that way too. So
yeah, I was wonderful thinking, to hang out with children just for that.
Yes, it sure is.
Yeah, and you know, also getting back to a prior conversation we were having, you know, young children have no concept of death. They have no concept of mortality. But when they get kidnapped by the gypsy thought, it gets drilled into them eventually. And that's why, you know, we have to renew our original thinking, renew our original consciousness.
Yeah, Jesus said, except you be converted and become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven.
Thank you.
Yeah.
How can we?
Yes. So most important. All of these things. And in another article, I think that Carrie sent, it brought out, you know, children, I think, too, they live in the present, right? I don't think they worry much about the future. That's a taught thing, too, or think about the past. They live in the present. And in order to keep your mortality, immortality, one of the ways it trips you up is when you start thinking about your past or your future in a worried kind of a way. And we're told not to. So ultimately, that's sinning. All you have is right
longing
now.
Longing for the past.
Longing for the past. Yeah, all of that.
Yeah, depression, anxiety, frustration.
Yes.
All those things.
Mm-hmm. Come from all of that. And then you, whoops, you're in the mortality thing. So stay out of it. Stay in the Father's house. And thine age shall be clearer than the noonday. Thou shalt shine forth. Thou shalt be as the morning. I just love that from Job. So beautiful. And that's the truth. Okay, Jeremy, read the golden text.
Psalms. I trusted in thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my God. My times are in thy hand.
Thank you. Now that, all of that, all every part of that is very important. Trusting in the Lord, knowing he's your God, and then my times are in thine hands. That's something Mrs. Evans would give to us often. You've heard Bruce give testimonies about it, and when the women were with child, we'd always know that the whole timing of everything was in God's hands. You need to know this. Everything about your life is in time-wise, is in God's hands. Work with that. Think about it. Whatever you're doing, it's the timing of it is in God's hands. He will take care of it. If you're praying and knowing about it, it'll all work out. It'll be okay. My times are in thine hands. It's a very, again, another powerful statement to work with.
It certainly is. Coming here and learning that I don't have to like figure out all the variables that God has taken care of, that was a wonderful relief to me.
Thank you. Yes.
I guess why children look so free, right? Because they know, my daddy, father, or mother taking care of me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. A little Ava's
so beautiful thing. To watch them. Children.
My daddy didn't say that or whatever, you know. Little child. My father didn't tell me that, so therefore it can't be true. That's our Heavenly Father. If our Heavenly Father doesn't tell us something, it can't be true. It's that childlike quality. And then this, and I know I've mentioned it often, but it's so powerful that the one ego, the one mind or spirit called God is infinite individuality, which supplies all form and comeliness, and which reflects reality and divinity in individual spiritual man and things. That is you, infinite individuality, your individuality, not your personality, but your how God made you. And then supplying all form, that definition, the shape or external appearance of a body, the figure as defined by lines and angles, manner of arranging particulars, beauty, elegance, splendor, dignity. He's supplying you with that. And comeliness, becoming fit, suitable, graceful, symmetric. All these things, if we let him as a spiritual idea, and that's who we are. They're not two of us. There's not this mortal man that's trying to become an immortal. We are immortal now and seeing the beauty and holiness of it right here, right now, every day. All right. So let's see. I thought we would end a little early because Carrie sent us a beautiful article, interesting letter it is, about Mrs. Eddy. And she certainly was a wonderful example of being an immortal, wasn't she? So.
This is an editorial from 1901 entitled An Interesting Letter. Where do I start?
Right at the beginning.
Oh, okay. Early in June, the Honorable Henry Robinson, postmaster of Concord, New Hampshire, received a letter from a lady in Seattle, Washington, asking whether he had ever declared that the discoverer and founder of Christian Science does not exist. Mr. Robinson's reply was of much interest and value, especially in view of the sensational statements which have been circulated through the country to the effect that the Reverend Mrs. Eddy is a myth, so far as present existence is concerned. The letter is as follows. Dear Madam, oh no, the postmaster at this city never said, even in the sheerest jest, that Mrs. Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, does not exist. He, of all men, has tangible proof of her positive verity. She gave her own signature in petition to the President of the United States for his reappointment as postmaster. He has, in many ways, been a beneficiary of her good favor and grace. She is a noble, beautiful woman, the most remarkable of the century, a radiant spirit indeed, and moreover, a veritable, highly respected, publicly spirited, patriotic, and charitable citizen of this, my native city. As former mayor and as postmaster, past and present, I have had audience at her home, Pleasant View, only a mile away from the city proper, and have had the honor and inspiration of personal interviews with her. She has kindly entrusted to me, to my keeping, certain biographical data as to herself, and I am proud to say that I have been otherwise appreciably recognized by her. I have all her books given me by herself, and I have contributed to the newspaper press and to various periodicals favorable articles upon her. When she appeared in our own Christian Science Hall in this city, I attended in behalf of the newspaper press, writing the article on her matchless discourse there, which went the rounds of the newspapers of the country. To have it said that I doubt her existence is, however, no more absurd and ridiculous than many of the stories told of her. But such is my personal respect and regard and official relations that it touches my sensibilities for a moment, and I am grieved. Otherwise, I would not so seriously answer your apparently candid inquiry. Within 50 feet of where I am now dictating this letter, in plain sight of everybody, Mrs. Eddy, with great punctuality, rides by in her carriage every day, bowing graciously to the townspeople whom she knows. And although they are not all Christian Scientists, I dare say there is not one of them who would not contend for her and resent the slightest indignity or imputation upon her. She frequently stops near the front of my own home to smile and speak to my little children playing there. And that anybody of ordinary intelligence should, for a moment, doubt her existence strikes us, who know her well, as startlingly absurd. Hundreds of Christian Scientists have been here during this very week to see her, her home, and the city in which she resides. One might as well ask if there really is such a man as President McKinley, or ever was such a woman as Queen Victoria. Mrs. Eddy is not only a president and a queen, but one of our own fellow citizens, a good neighbor, and a very valuable friend, one of us in many senses. While I am not myself an avowed disciple of Christian Science, I am nevertheless much interested in it and its achievements. I have had much to do with Christian Scientists and have found them invariably upright and intellectual, as well as spiritual people. And they have been very courteous and considerate toward me. And I have never let fall any remark such as might have given rise to the annoying error on somebody's part to which you have kindly called my attention.
I have the honor to be yours very respectfully, Henry Robinson, Postmaster. And then the editorial continues. With deep pleasure, we republish from the Patriot the above graphic letter of Postmaster Robinson. One would think the perusal of it by the persons who have been silly enough to circulate the falsehood would cause their cheeks to tinge with the blush of shame and humiliation.
So I'd just like to add that I bought this book last fall, so for our library. So this is part of the reason we have the library, so that we have these kinds of materials.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Yes.
And thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.